this morning we have another uplifting message from the prophet Jeremiah. The news is not really getting any better for God's people, is it? As we hear week after week from the prophet. Now, just for those that might not know what winnowing is or what it means to winnow something, in its simplest form, it's throwing the harvested mixture up into the air so that the wind blows away the lighter chaff and allows the heavier grain to fall back for recovery. Obviously, you can see it with the forks tossing it up. And so if the wind is too strong, it's not going to do its job. See, in the past, we know that God has tried to cleanse his people, to get his people to come back, to see their error of their ways, to turn back to God, to follow his commandments, and be the people that he wants them to be. He's attempted to blow away the chaff, so to speak, in the lives of these people. And obviously, as we hear from Jeremiah, it wasn't working. Now the consequences are more severe. The stakes have been raised. And it makes us wonder, why didn't they listen? Why did they choose to ignore all the warnings? It's not like, you know, God snuck up on them. He made it pretty clear. Why did they choose to ignore the prophets? Why did they allow it to get to the point where they're facing total destruction? I mean, it boggles the mind. It just seems so illogical, doesn't it? All the evidence pointed to the fact that God had provided for them all along, that God was good to his word. And now God is making it pretty clear what's going to happen. They've used up all their warnings. Yeah, I love it, because how does he describe the people? My poor people. My foolish people. My stupid children. And I would say we might sit here and agree with God that these people seem awfully foolish and stupid. In some ways, we think, you know what, they're kind of getting what they deserve, don't they? But I want to turn that around to us. How do we respond to warnings? Are we much different? How many people continue to smoke despite the incredible amount of proof of the damage that smoking causes to that person and to those around them? We now have giant warnings on the cigarette packs. We have giant ads going up saying how you shouldn't be smoking, you shouldn't be doing this. And yet people continue. How many continue to text and drive despite the increasing evidence that it is as deadly, if not more so, than driving drunk? We have warnings all over the place. My gosh, we have commercials. You get the little hand to put on your car that says, you know, I don't text and drive. You have warnings again and again, and yet we still do it. How many continue to speed, even with the research showing how dangerous it is, not only to the driver, but obviously to the people they might hit? We have warnings, we have laws, we have consequences. So why doesn't our behavior change? We get pulled over and we get mad at the cop if we get a ticket, or we brag if we get off with a warning. Yet in either instance, our behavior usually doesn't change, does it? Perhaps in the short term, we're more likely to be cautious, but long term, we often go back to our usual habits. Anyone that's driven in the car with me knows that is very true. And it's sadly often not until something drastic happens that causes us to truly change. I know for myself, I had to hit rock bottom before I was willing to change my destructive lifestyle and finally seek to live as God wanted me to. Well, this is what we're seeing in Jeremiah. In some ways, we're being told about a reversal of the created order. In Genesis, what does it say that we're told that out of the void, God created heavens and earth? He gave it light and life. What do we hear in Jeremiah? But the earth has become void with no light, no living thing. Pretty hopeless situation, isn't it? Probably a pretty appropriate reading on a gloomy, rainy day. Yet in the midst of it, we are given hope. Because again, how does God refer to his people? My people. He doesn't just write them off because their unwillingness to live as they're supposed to. And then when we're told that it will be total destruction, utter destruction, nothing left, what's the next word? Yet. Yet, God says, he won't make a full end. There will be a remnant. In the midst of despair, there is hope. It's the light at the end of the tunnel. While most likely this generation will suffer because of their actions, and in fact the next generation will suffer as well, and I think it goes down a couple generations before they actually come back from captivity, we're shown that God always has mercy in mind, even when he executes judgment. And when we look at our own world, we can think that some of God's same judgment is happening now. Read in the paper about the flooding in Colorado and people being evacuated and people losing their lives. The fires in California and elsewhere. My gosh, the fire on the boardwalk in New Jersey that destroyed, I think, 5 blocks. The drought, of course, 4 months of no rain except for today. And then not to mention the constant conflicts and wars around the globe, with obviously Syria at the top of the list. Where is God? Where is this mercy? Where is this hope when we read the paper or turn on the news? It's easy to respond in fear to this, isn't it? To kind of say, well, obviously, God really isn't there. In 2 of the verses that we didn't read this morning, we're shown the frustration and despair at what's to come. It says, your ways and your deeds have brought this upon you. This is your doom, and it is bitter. It has reached your very heart. My anguish, I writhe in pain. Oh, the walls of my heart is beating wildly. I cannot keep silent, for I hear the sound of the trumpet, the alarm of war. It's anguish. So how can we get the long-term vision that will affect our short-term actions? What is the remedy to this fear? It's faithfulness. How should we as believers respond to the world? How should we respond to the hopelessness that seems to abound around us? Faithfulness. So when commentator shares, God may be frustrated, but God has not abandoned us. God has remained present and faithful and has given us chance after chance after chance after chance to make things right. Our response to God's patience, mercy, and grace ought to be by committing ourselves to lives of prayer and study, committing our lives to following in the ways of Jesus, and practicing the ways of justice and mercy for others as we work for the transformation of the world. See, we have no excuse. God's made it pretty plain through his word what he desires. He desires obedience to him. He desires us to walk through that path, even with the consequences of choosing that path. We might suffer for the choices that we make. Just because things get hard doesn't mean we've made the wrong choice. It means that we have to hold on that much more to the promises of God. Hold on to the promises of God in the midst of destruction. In the midst of what seems hopeless, knowing that God always has mercy in mind, even when judgment is being act it out. We need to live in a way that will work to bring about God's ultimate restoration of all creation. Well, scientists have a theory called the chaos theory, which refers to an apparent lack of order in a system that nevertheless obeys particular laws or rules. And they explain it calling it the butterfly effect. I don't know if you've heard this before. It's theorized that something as small as the flutter of a butterfly's wing at a certain point can ultimately cause a typhoon halfway across the world. And yet I want to say that I don't think the consequences always have to be negative. How then might we be agents of change in a positive way? How can we kind of in some ways flutter our wings here in Des Moines to make a positive change, who knows, overseas? Imagine what difference there would have been in the world if the leaders of Judah would have heeded Jeremiah's warning. We often think, well, I'm just one person. What can I really do? Or I'm just a student, or I'm just a young kid. I can't really do anything. Or I'm too old, and I'm no longer able to affect change. God says each one of us is called to follow him, and that our actions can and do make a difference for the better or for the worse. Who knows that even our small actions here in Des Moines, I mean, think about the raising of the money for the water well overseas. Even a simple dollar into that pot that brings us to the point where we can afford to buy the well for those people might make a profound effect in someone's life. Who knows the ramifications of that well in the life of another person who then might come into relationship with Jesus and then might encourage others and perhaps become the next Nelson Mandela, the next Martin Luther King Jr., the next person that ends up making a large difference. We don't know. And so pray that each one of us may seek to make God known in our small actions, within our sphere of influence, so he might use those actions for his greater purpose. God desires mercy even as judgment is executed. He's called on us to be agents of that mercy. Amen.